wonderful.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to us after a week off. Brought to you by the Alabama Take. We are taking it down, your favorite pop culture podcast. Let's see what's on deck today. We're going to be talking about the Netflix show from Martin Scorsese, Pretend It's a City, the new Disney Plus show, WandaVision, and as always, some odds and ends to begin the show. Let me bring in and introduce my friends, my co-hosts, in case you don't know them. We've got Adam Morrow and Donovan Reinwald with us. Adam, hello.
Good morning. It's morning here. Got my coffee. Feeling good.
Yeah, we record in the morning. We release in the morning. So if you listen to us first thing in the morning, Tuesdays, we are in your podcast feed early. Hey, Donovan, what's going on?
Good evening. It's morning here, but I run on Tokyo time. Gotta get up, trade my stocks.
These stocks are not going to filter themselves, yeah.
They certainly are not.
My favorite Don Williams song, Tokyo Time.
Hey, Green Bay Packers soup for fan over here. Getting ready. Who's ready for the NFC Championship?
It was a good sports weekend so far.
Good sports run since we've been on air. We got Alabama win the national championship. They're 115th.
What a game! You know, I read a pretty good article last night about what happened in the injury tent once Devontae went in there. If anybody hasn't found that, that's a good read. How these guys basically turn into Superman with these injuries and how they got Landon Dickerson back out there. Just a lot of good. You know, when you beat somebody's ass that bad, the storylines just turn very fun. It's not competitive anymore. It's just like, how did these people do this? It's not about the game anymore. It's about like the storylines around the game and the players' personalities. And then, you know, they talk about Landon Dickerson trying to come back and just being stubborn as a bull about it, and then finally letting him go in and snap the ball. And Devontae, apparently they like tried to get his finger back into place for like 20 minutes in that tent.
Couldn't pop it back in.
Just sounded like torture. But it's a good article about kind of the inner workings of the sideline, since, you know, there wasn't really that much to write about on the other side of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Where is that article?
It's a Sports Illustrated article.
Oh, okay. They still write?
Apparently so.
All right, good for them. Kudos.
Did anyone watch that? You were speaking of sports. It was a little bit before the national championship, kind of like an obstacle course thing.
The Notre Dame game?
No, a bunch of fascists tried to hurdle democracy. It was from.
We haven't talked about that.
It was live streamed.
We have been off air since the Capitol takeover from rednecks and fascists. Or fascist supporters. I guess to be a fascist, you would have to be in charge, right?
No, I don't think so.
The thing about saying they're rednecks, there were very smart people out there and very smart people
very
sending
rich
them
people.
There. Yeah.
That's what I want to argue against, because you made the point yesterday off air, obviously, to me and a friend, Jeff. Shout out to Jeff. You said, what kind of people you know, think they're not going to get caught, but yet have their cell phone in their pocket the whole time?
White people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's people who think they're living consequence free. Yeah,
okay,
for
okay.
Sure.
White people.
Right. There's a tweet that said these people won't get a shot because they think Bill Gates is trying to, tag them in some way for tracking.
Absolutely.
Yet when they try to overthrow the government, they take their cell phones in with GPS still enabled. Like, we're not, you know.
Well, you know, to be fair to them, the executive branch is 100% on their side.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So maybe that makes you feel like you might get a slide.
Well, like my point about the people being intelligent, you do have the Tubervilles of the world who he's just unintelligent. He doesn't know how the world works. Or maybe he does because he's a senator and I'm not.
I was going to say, he knows how it works enough to get elected senator in Alabama. I don't know.
Well, shit, anybody does. Just put an R by your name and that's it.
But somebody like the Josh Hawleys of the world, I mean, that dude was a Supreme Court clerk. You know, that's a sought-after position for a law school grad. He's not an idiot.
Yeah. Okay, to shift gears into one of our regular segments, I really am looking forward to, let's say a week from today, maybe 5 days from now, hearing how many of those people spread COVID.
I can't wait.
Well, it's already come out that which Democratic congresswoman has it now because some of the Republicans refuse to wear a mask in the
I was referencing more of the people with anti-Semitic shirts on in the Capitol.
Sure.
That weren't supposed to be there.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's still a thing.
Can you believe I just found it astonishing. I know I say this every week almost. We're not a political podcast, but I found it astonishing. In 2021, people are walking around with these grotesque, painful T-shirts that say it's like an acronym or something. I'm not even that familiar with it, but it says there should have been more Jews that die in the Holocaust. It's what is it? Do you guys know what I'm talking about? This one guy with the shirt. Oh God, it's so disgusting.
I'm a big old dummy, and I cry. There's a Holocaust memorial in Boston, and I cry every time I walk through it.
It's
2 or 3 years ago. Somebody vandalized. You know, it's very alive. Very alive.
The Holocaust Museum, I think it's called. I probably misnomered it. It's in Washington, D.C. is just the most powerful experience you can have. And to see somebody wear that, I don't know. I don't get it. Where does that right-wing thinking come from that coincides with believing that Jews or should die or something? I grew up in a right-leaning household, and never once did my father say anything negative about Jewish people or even remotely bad. I don't understand it. I can't get my head around it.
No, I can't at all. Especially if you ask some of those people, I'm sure they think that we need to send more money to Israel.
Yes,
that's my favorite disconnect. I think
that is my favorite. Yeah, like you had literally, I mean, my evangelical subculture is just both the most fascinating and repellent thing to me.
I agree.
And you know, you've got people literally blowing shofars, walking around and, you know, waving the flag of the state of Israel.
Well, let's get into more lighthearted fare. There's a lot to be said about that, but we tend to avoid politics. And you know what, guys? After this week, after January 20th, we might be able to avoid political discourse.
Nah, maybe. I'm forming a well-regulated militia. me and three cats, but I'm tying knives to them.
You've had a cat crawling over you this entire time we've been taping. I don't think you can regulate anything.
Yeah, can you imagine what happens when I let him loose?
I want to, before we get into more of a little bit more of the show proper, we still got some odds and ends to come. I want to shout out to Kaysen Doss, who came to me in person, 6 feet away, socially distanced, to tell me how much he loved the show. He was very complimentary of all of us, actually, not just the show itself, but you guys. And that's even better than a review or any Apple write-up to me. He had high praise for this show, except for Donovan. He didn't like Donovan.
Hey, Kaysen. You're a dead man.
Kaysen's a sweet guy, man. So
watch
thank
out, Kaysen. I'm coming for you.
So let's talk about a little bit of news. Netflix made this announcement for movies this year, 2021. They are going to drop 71 movies in 2021 in all sorts of genres and foreign films, I think documentaries, and of course regular scripted drama films or comedies or whatever. So the full list is actually up on Variety.com. And what do you guys think? Did you look at that?
You know, there's kind of an early, at least for me, just based on some of the pictures, like, I want this to be cool and I'll probably watch it with Jonathan Majors going to be in it. The guy from Lovecraft Country, the Western Harder They Fall. Looks cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really liked him in Lovecraft Country and Defy Bloods. I didn't like Lovecraft Country as much. I loved him. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty excited to see that.
Well, it's also got Regina King and Idris Elba in it, so it's promising. That one's quite promising, and
that one could be cool. Me too. Yeah, I think Fear Street was something that I'd heard might be good at some point.
Tell me more about that one. That one's
I don't remember because I think I had heard about this on a podcast of like, here's things that we're looking forward to. And then, but I may be getting it mixed up with something else. And then there was just a, and then there was a long list of movie titles.
Mm-hmm. Fear Street's a film trilogy shot back to back in Georgia in 2019.
Yeah, I feel like I heard like, ooh, keep an eye out for this because it might be. And it was a Fox thing, and then, Fox, you know, Disney acquired Fox, and then now they're figuring out. What are we going to do with this? And I guess it made its way to Netflix.
Cool. Pretty fascinating that they're saying they're going to be a month apart, according to this article. And if it probably a Halloween thing, and if it had been a conventional year, a conventional era, this would have been months apart or years apart, probably.
Uh-huh.
That's just fascinating. And we keep touching on, you know, whether it's the Mandalorian release schedule of making you wait a week or WandaVision now. You know, the effects of watching at home, what films translate to the home, what makes sense. I don't know. We're experiencing a pretty massive shift.
The last trilogy I can think of that was shot all at once like that and then released piecemeal, I'm sure there are others, but this is just what pops in my head, is the Lord of the Rings one. Can you imagine a Netflix release for the Lord? Like, you got the Fellowship of the Ring in August, we're rolling into the Two Towers by September, and come October, that's right, baby, it's the king.
I would have hated that.
Yeah.
Having to wait a year was great. And it was like every Christmas for 3 years, you had something to look forward to.
Amazon is actually, I think, putting out their Lord of the Rings-based television show this year.
Blaine?
Yeah?
That shit's for nerds.
That's why I'm bringing it up to you, my man. I know you guys are bigger fans of that than I.
Big time. I got pretty burned by the Hobbit escapades. But
let me tell you, the more liquor you sneak into a theater, the better those movies get.
They make a lot more sense.
They do make way more sense.
We have the one other movie I want to mention from Netflix is big news was Don't Look Up. It's got Jennifer Lawrence, Leo DiCaprio, Timothy Chalamet, Kid Cudi, Meryl Streep. I mean, that the cast alone does sound promising, right?
That sounds like an Ocean's film.
It does. And, yeah, it really does.
I've been kind of missing Jennifer Lawrence. I actually like her. And I don't, when she kind of gets to be weird and stretch her wings a little bit. So I'd like to see, I hope it gives her a good challenge.
So when this list came out, I kept thinking, okay, are Netflix movies good? But I remembered, yeah, some of them can be really good. And I was reminded of my two favorites, maybe, and they seem to be the best. Roma and The Irishman are both like excellent movies.
I think the answer here is Netflix movies not made by Netflix are good.
Probably so. Do you have a favorite Netflix movie that seems to be, you know, only on Netflix?
Those are two pretty big standouts right there, Roma and The Irishman. And I don't think you can say one's better than the other because they're such different movies. But they are two movies that I wish I'd seen in theaters. It was nice to be able to see, especially like The Irishman in my own home, take bathroom breaks, that sort of thing, because it is long. But I wish I'd seen it in theaters.
I mean, Defy Bloods was a pretty good entry.
Really good one.
I'm not saying that it's the best, but there's some good stuff on there.
I figured you'd say Hubie Halloween.
You saw me.
And Adam,
that's what I was going to say. Okay. Thanks, Blaine. You reminded me of something. Do you know why I'm very excited that that The Weeknd is playing the Super Bowl?
Please tell me.
Go on.
Because he also starred in the Adam Sandler vehicle, Uncut Gems.
Quite a role in that one, yep. You know that movie, Uncut Gems, this is sidebar, but that movie gave my wife some serious panic attacks.
I believe did the it. Same to my wife, too.
I mean, not literally, but like very, very close.
I walked out of that going like, that was awesome. And Beth's going like, I felt like I was going to throw up the whole time.
I remember people saying that it was the theater experience. I didn't get to see it in theaters. Was akin to like how a horror movie made you feel as a younger person, like just like tense the whole time and kind of on the edge of your seat. And I totally can see that. I mean, even watching it on the little screen was an intense evening.
I think roughly half of my theater walked out before the movie was over.
Really? Why?
What?
I think a bunch of people had only seen the words Adam Sandler. Which was very funny to me.
That's like when I went to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I went in like the middle of the day, and there was still a fair amount of people there because it was the first week. And when they figure out that it's going to be Manson related, it's such a long film, and like I've been on a run that morning, and it was summer, and I rehydrated, and I was like, I gotta pee, I gotta run out here really fast. And this older couple was leaving the theater, and I heard her say to her husband, "I didn't know this was about that." It's like, what did you expect from a Tarantino film? Like, even if it's going to be Manson-esque at some point, even if it's not Manson, I don't understand.
I am kind of puzzled. Like I've been in theaters where I don't know how these people, when I watched Blade Runner 2049, there were like two like moms with probably 13, 14, 15 year old girls, like three, four behind us. And the girls the whole time kept going, "Ew," and talking through it. And at the end of it, the mom went, "I'm sorry, guys. I didn't know what this was going to be." I'm like, how did you pick this
out of everything
and spend your money on
it? In this day and age, yeah, how do you not? Just a quick Google search.
I was about to say, I guarantee you they had never seen the original Blade Runner.
No,
they had not. And
that confirms it.
Let me tell you, they did not know what was going on. But yeah, they.
My favorite instance of this, and this was pre being able to just Google the thing while you're looking at the poster with the device in your pocket. But when I saw the first Lord of the Rings, and you know they're building up, we have to go to Mordor, and it hadn't really entered pop culture that this is going to be like a big saga yet, you know, because it news just trickled differently. But there was a father and son behind me and my dad sitting there watching it, and they get to the end, and it seems like Mordor is right across the river, you know, like they're so close, it's about to end, and then it cuts to black, and the guy behind us just says, "Oh hell no," and they get up and storm out.
I have also a Lord of the Rings related one. The first time I went to go see Return of the King in the theater, and you know, it starts with the two hobbits, they're in Mordor, they're kind of picking their way over the rocks, and the lady behind me goes, "Who's that boy? Is he the king?"
Just going in cold to the third film. That's a choice.
It's a good choice.
My friend Joel has a story that I also always think of, kind of related to this, where he went to go see Silence, Martin Scorsese film Silence, at a local art theater. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it ends pretty brutally, right? And the screen just goes to black. And like this lady in the front with just the loudest whisper possible goes, "That movie was directed by Martin Scorsese."
True.
Lovely.
True.
All right. We're going to get into Martin Scorsese in a little bit after the break. Let's talk
He's a great dude.
Guys, I just got an alert. Phil Spector just died.
Oh.
Whoa.
He was in jail, right?
He was in jail.
Did he die of COVID? That's not a nice thing to say, but he did run someone over. He did die of COVID, maybe?
That reminds me of a Phil Spector story that I'd heard about. The Ramones had gone to L.A. to get him to produce an album for them, and they were not vibing very well with him. And so the Ramones were just going to, it getting pretty late, they were going to get up and just like leave and maybe not have much else to do with the idea of working with Phil Spector. Spector gets up, goes to the bedroom, and comes back with a gun and just lays it on the table. Just lays it on the table. And they're like, "Oh, well, I guess we're not leaving right now." And they ended up working with him, I think. Or I know they did. They ended up getting the album produced. That's the story, you know. I don't know how much of that I got accurate, but Phil Spector.
He wouldn't go on to kill somebody, so I believe it.
He was a gun fanatic. That's confirmed. All right. We're going to talk about the Marvel show starting up this week on Disney+, WandaVision, part of the MCU. This show is somewhat based on the comic with the same name, WandaVision, that came out. about Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, and Vision, brings them back from Avengers films. They've never had a vehicle of their own. They've both been just part of the Avengers family, so to speak. This is their first foray on the small screen. The first, I think, show for MCU on Disney Plus was supposed to be Falcon and Winter Soldier, but COVID halted that production, if I'm not mistaken. And instead, we get WandaVision, which two episodes dropped on Friday, which we've seen both of those. So what did you think, Natalie?
I thought it was really fun. I'm very excited about where it's going to go. I like that we got, you know, I was a little worried watching it, especially, no offense to Adam, but I was afraid Adam watching it, he would be like, this is goofy and dumb and I don't care about this. But I think they dropped in just enough of like, well, like he doesn't have like the background. Like I'm like listening to all the dumb Marvel podcasts and, you know, I'm deep diving, whereas he may not be as invested as I am. But I feel like they dropped in enough of those kind of darker hints of where it's hopefully going to go. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what's going to happen in the next few weeks.
Paul Bettany sure does a heck of a Dick Van Dyke impression, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. It's great.
He seemed like he was having fun, and I was very something that I liked was the casting of people who have actually worked in sitcoms in this show, which kind of helped almost maximize the dissonance when things get creepy.
I really appreciated, speaking of old sitcoms, I appreciated how it played in this like toy box of old sitcoms, and then it would stick to them, but yet throw you off with these like modern camera angles or techniques to signal something's wrong. Like there's no way you would see this particular movement of camera in a 1950s sitcom. And that was like your wink and your nod that something's amiss here.
Especially, it was funny, but almost any time they did an exterior house shot, which, because you never get those in those old sitcoms.
It was almost
like, oh, something's wrong here. And then usually there was something wrong there.
Yeah, particularly striking was when she found the helicopter. You know, I remember thinking like, oh, there, this is in an actual place. We're not like in a studio set. When they had done such a good job, like the house is so big on the inside and it's so empty feeling. It's like it just they hyper did the old sitcom thing until those moments. I don't know, it was good. It kind of reminded me of like Twilight Zone kind of vibes at times.
Sure
when
did.
It veered out of control, or not out of control, but anything ominous was happening. It was that flavor.
I liked how I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I liked it, how they would play with kind of like, you know, horror and comedy are actually really, really close together, like with Vision trying to figure out what his company actually does. And that could be a sitcom plot line, like, will you just make, but like here it's like we're primed to be like, this is way more ominous. But it could double as just a sitcom plot line. I don't know what my company does, it makes nothing.
Yeah, it really cultivated this atmosphere that anything could happen. I felt so on edge watching this, more so than I have in some horror movies of late. I felt like anything could happen at any second, because of the absurdity of the setting. Natalie, how invested are you in these two characters? Because I think you and I are both probably, maybe of the four of us, we're the biggest MCU people.
I think, you know, if you had asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would say I don't know a whole lot. And from just watching what they've done in the Marvel movies, you know, the relationship is weird. I don't buy it. But like I said, not to talk about another podcast on your podcast, but I've been listening to those binge mode.
Yeah.
They've been doing the Marvel series. And a couple weeks ago, they did one where they did a really deep dive on Wanda, Scarlet Witch, and the whole WandaVision thing. And it made it, it was just so much more interesting to kind of get to know the, not necessarily a backstory, but kind of the, just the weird, I mean, it's a dark storyline. And just like getting that little hint made watching this so much more exciting. Cause like you said, I mean, you're on edge cause it's like glossy and fun and goofy, but like, there's just something right underneath the surface. And sometimes it comes up from the surface, but I don't know. It's exciting.
Elizabeth Olsen has really come into her own as Wanda Maximoff. You know, she was not highly praised in her appearance in Age of Ultron when she first became, you know, or was the character, right? What am I trying to say here? First time she was on screen as the Scarlet Witch, she didn't get a lot of praise.
Yeah, I'm glad they let her do away with the weird Eastern European accent in WandaVision.
I really wanted to bring that up too, because I was like, I appreciated so much that she wasn't doing that.
And I suppose that's a natural thing that would fade away over the course of several years and hanging out with a bunch of Americans and British people, right?
Sure. I don't know. I'm just glad we've just decided to ignore it. I wish we'd kind of ignored it in the first place.
Well, that's true. It hindered her performance in Age of Ultron, that alone. But here, she was allowed to do a lot more, and I think it helped her. It showed that she actually is a pretty good actress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's in that movie that I never get the title right. It's Martha, Macy, Marlene, Mary, something. Have you seen that?
I never have.
It's about
is that worth checking out?
Stellar stuff. It's got John Hawkes. You know, we've mentioned John Hawkes.
Yeah, he's great.
And it's about a cult. He's sort of a cult leader, and she is she's involved with that. But man, her acting chops are magnificent in that movie. And others, but here she finally gets a chance to do some other things, and I really enjoyed, because what she, especially her, more so than Paul Bettany, I think, she had to create this atmosphere of everything's okay, but deep inside her eyes, something's not right,
mm-hmm.
and she kind of had to play that way, and I thought it was fantastic. It was a good show.
I think my favorite scene kind of related to that was when the woman cuts her hand. And yes. the blood comes through, and it just, yeah. And Paul, I agree with you. Like, Paul Bettany doesn't have, he gets to be goofy, and she really has to be, I don't know, is audience surrogate too much? The person who's letting us know that we shouldn't be laughing with the laugh track.
Mm-hmm.
I told Adam, it just looks like she's having so much fun though. Like when she does like classic, like after the dinner thing with the boss, and she like sighs and leans against the door very dramatically. I was like,
yes.
Like fun for the actors.
Every time they hit that couch.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, this show, it's a good thing that they released two episodes, because it would not have worked, mm-mm. I think, with one episode. It would have left us hanging way too much.
I'm also glad to have the two. Because we got to see, it's a different sitcom this week, right? First week is kind mm-hmm. of like Dick Van Dyke-ish, The Bewitched. The second one is a little later.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously we go to color at the end of, so we're kind of like, oh, okay.
What are we looking at next week? Brady Bunch era?
I'm hoping Cosby Show.
Well, I think that would be the next week. That would be the 80s one.
I have seen a picture of Catherine Hahn.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
In like 80s joggers and stuff. So I'm assuming we're heading that way.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Hahn, I read a review from Alan Sepinwall, and I agreed with him when I was watching, that I think that she just had a little bit too much to carry, I think.
Mm.
But she's always great, so it wasn't too big of a deal. It wasn't too big of a hindrance.
And that was what she was one of the people I thought of, like, I'm glad they cast. She's been in a lot of stuff. She's been in traditional, she's been in kind of like, for lack of a better word, like crummy, cheesy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. She's great, but she's been in a lot of, so she, I think she knows that. And it's been, I actually have really enjoyed watching her turn it up to 11 in the midst of all this.
Especially since the last thing I watched her in is I Know This Much Is True.
Yeah.
Which was like her getting to play like the serious, you know, very dramatic, very great role. And then to flip and do this and kind of, it's not, I mean, the Parks and Rec character was obviously very different, but it's kind of back into that over the top goofiness.
Yeah, kind of brassy.
Such a jolt to see her go from that HBO show, I Know This Much Is True, to this, that I pretty much forgot that she was in that show.
Yeah.
I forgot that was her. So what do we have for, there's a lot going on as far as speculation to be had. What are our theories?
So I have a question before we get into this. Blaine, do these ever, Blaine and Natalie, do these ever inspire you to say, I want to check out the comic run of this? Or do you just want to watch the TV show or maybe check it out after the show is over?
I think it's an after the fact thing, because I think
okay.
They're not going to be able to do everything that's happening in the comics, I think. And so I'd rather just see one interpretation and then go to the source material.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The thing for me, that's happened before, especially early on in the MCU. I'd go back to the comics and try to pick up on some of these characters that I didn't follow as a kid. And I cannot read comics anymore. And here's why. They bold certain words and my mind cannot get the pacing of the dialogue because of that. So my inner voice will be shouting those words to me and I just can't get in a rhythm of reading. That's probably too much than you wanted. But,
that's funny.
So let's talk theories. And that helicopter did have a sword on it, which is sort of an offshoot of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, hinting at there's some sort of organization pulling the strings, maybe. And we did have the guy watching the screen of what's happening to Vision and Wanda. We did have the watch that was an advertisement. It was a timepiece, had Hydra's insignia on it. So she's either creating an alternate reality or one is being created for her and Vision. And as we know, Vision died and he hasn't been resurrected in any. So, you know, we don't get the explanation of the fact that he's just walking around these days.
Yeah, I agree. My whole, when we got done watching, I looked over at Adam and I just said, you know that Vision's dead, right? Like I don't know what I think. I don't know what direction they're going to play this. I would be surprised if her brother doesn't show up at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see how they're going to play her pregnancy. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I know how they play it in the comics, so I want to see how they're going to do it here and how they handle it.
So, spoiler for anyone who doesn't know, and I don't. So what happens in the comics with the child?
I think, and I may get this wrong because I only know based on what another podcast has told me and what I remember from that. But I believe the children, I think it's twins, I think. I may be wrong. But after a while, they just disappear because they are just her magic. They aren't actual children. They're just magic. And then her magic goes away. First of all, something happens. I don't know. Suddenly her children are gone. And it's just weird. It's just, it could get very dark. And I hope it does. But I hope they handle it well.
Yeah, same.
Well, how much liberty does the MCU have to even make this kind of show? It's kind of impressive.
Well, I think we're going to find that out by watching this show. You know, how much liberty do they have?
How much goodwill have they garnered? Just, you know. Okay, well, hey, Natalie, while we got you here and on mic, you got any quick thoughts on this week's challenge?
Oh, man. What a couple of weeks we've had with the challenge. It's been great. I loved every second of it. I think this last episode was probably the best episode of the season so far. Long live Queen Big T and CT. And it was brilliant. I loved it. What did you think, Blaine?
It's gripping. I am glued to the television every second of it. I'll keep my thoughts that broad. Adam, what about you?
I think it's been great. I think the double agent twist has made it fun to see who figures out how to use it to their advantage first. It makes the every aspect of it, you know, the games within the game, it's all great. And I think it was a bummer. I'm a big Tory fan, so it was a bummer to see the kind of the rise and then the fall. It just a lot of pride from her, and it cost her.
Did she lose you a little? Were you like pulling against her at all? Because I kind of was.
No, I wasn't pulling against her. And I like Anissa. And Anissa is kind of like pulling for like, you know, a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, which I don't go that far to pull for Tom Brady. But, you know, give her one last shot for a deep run into the game. I don't mind when she wins at all. But Tori, maybe it's a humbling experience You know, as physically good as she is, she's not great at strategy, in-game mm-hmm. strategy. She can't figure out the mechanics of the competition very well. You know, if it was just like we have to lift weights or run a 10K, she's going to win every time. But
she reminded me a lot of Jordan's early games this season, which is not a good thing.
How confidence. So?
Yeah, like overly confident. You know, she's done well a couple of times, and so she thinks that that puts her on the level of all these other veterans that have done well a lot of times. And I think it bit her in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Kind of got into some weird turf with the big girl, small girl divide in the house. That was weird.
Yeah. Okay, how so?
Well, I think that Tori and Anissa made it a thing, and the younger girls who are smaller, maybe Tori's age, I don't know, but the rookie girls took mm-hmm. offense to
Amber M, right?
Yeah, and it's like, well, you know, a lot of these are sized-based competitions. If they had gone into Hall Brawl, which they just saw, Tori's gonna, you know, run you into the back wall.
But they forget about, I mean, Camilla won several seasons, and she was a small girl. Like, that doesn't mean anything, and I think that Tori was wrong to make that her point.
Yeah, I mean, walking around the house and saying who you want to go against because it'll be an easy win, that's in poor form.
I didn't add my confessional, nor did Adam, I don't think, for this week's coverage on the website, but that was easily the worst elimination performance I've ever seen.
It was bad. I feel like they had to tell her that she could push it back to get the momentum going to tip the basket of medicine balls over. Right? It was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah, it's horrible. Okay, well, let's take a break. We'll be back on the other side to talk a little bit of Netflix's show, Pretend It's a City. All right, while we take a break, let me remind you, dear listener, that you can help yourself to some of the Alabama Taking It Down merchandise by heading to the site, clicking on shop, and finding the link to our Tee Public store where you can find our different designs for t-shirts, bags, hoodies, a lot more than that, all kinds of apparel. If you want to help the site and podcast with hosting and production, feel free to click the other link in shop, which is buymeacoffee.com, and you can make just a donation if you want. Make sure to check out the website. This season of the challenge is covered every Thursday by one of our originators, T.D. Wood. He lets you know what went down and analyzes all of that. And to leave you wanting more, we do have some new things coming on the alabamatake.com in the coming months, so stay tuned there. Let's jump back into Taking It Down. Okay, we're back. We're going to talk about Pretend It's a City, which is over on Netflix, a 7-episode limited series brought to you by Martin Scorsese. And this was really not quite on my radar. I knew it existed. I had heard chatter about it online. But what brought it really to the forefront of my attention was going into this, we had the idea, Adam and I had this conversation that Martin Scorsese rarely does anything wrong. That's kind of rare. And so he alone kind of got us into the door of the show. The show, though, is about author and public speaker, noted intellectual Fran Lebowitz. It's all about her, really. And the premise is just that simple. It's a lot of Martin Scorsese laughing while Fran Lebowitz lovingly bitches about life, particularly in New York City. That's it.
His laugh is the MVP of the show. I mean, he clearly just has a blast hanging out with her and laughing his ass off. The New York Times piece that I read about this noted, they interviewed both of them and talked about a bit about how they made a show about a city that then disappeared this year in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to a major city since COVID broke out because I'm holding tight where I'm supposed to be, but people say it's kind of a ghost town. So they were noting that so much of what they had captured isn't existing right now. They even talked about they usually spend New Year's Eve together watching movies. Which was a funny thought of these, like Scorsese and Fran Lebowitz and a handful of other of that generation of intellectuals and artists chilling and watching movies.
I want to back up just for a second. You said you haven't been to a major city recently. You don't count Washington, D.C. when you were at the Capitol.
Blaine, I turned my GPS off. I tried to get the people around me to do it, and you're going to spoil it here.
Yeah, well, okay. But yeah, the cities, you know, deservedly, I guess, and that might not be the adverb I want, but cities have shut down, and necessarily. This New York is non-existent at the moment. The first episode, let's just go with just a few episodes. I think you've watched four, I've watched five. There are seven total. The first episode was just thoroughly New York and how the city reflects Leibovitz and vice versa. You know, ingrained in her as this New Yorker that a lot of people are going to find brash and maybe even dislikable. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I watched it and thought, well, this is the figure that when people say coastal elites, mm-hmm. This is who they hate. They hate this person.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And this is a particular coastal elite you find in New York. I appreciated her, though, because when I'm in New York City, I am very cognizant, very aware, to the point of being a little silly, that the city is not mine. And I'm very much in the way of those people to whom it belongs. And that's what I was reminded of in that first episode. That, and she talks about how people are just in her damn way.
She's not a fan. Not a fan at all. I thought all that was funny. I mean, it's kind of a classic monologue about New York by a New Yorker. But she brought in some interesting elements, like noting odd things about the city, like why are there plaques on the ground? Things like that. She had a bit of a different take, and she's just a funny person.
Mm-hmm. Am I crazy in that I've been in New York five times now, I think, and I don't know that I've ever seen those plaques. Am I just too busy trying to get out of everyone's way?
I think so. The plaques are great.
Shame on me for never noticing those.
I love a plaque.
I do too. I'll stop and read one, but I can't believe I've never... I guess maybe I'm looking at my phone like she complains about. I'm looking at my phone, but I'm looking at my phone not to answer text messages, but to use the GPS to get around the city.
It's how the FBI gets you.
She doesn't have a phone, a cell phone. She doesn't have a computer. She's like...
Famously, yeah, did she say that? She doesn't have a cell phone?
She's very clear that she doesn't text. And a little bit of background research will tell you she doesn't use a computer or anything like that. She's living in a world that does not exist anymore. I guess if you attain a certain status before technology changes, you can just have... It's like when they said that the pandemic was the first time that Saban has sent an email personally. It's like, oh, he had just attained a status previous to that being necessary that he'd get somebody else to do it for him. You know, these are luxuries that most of us are not afforded.
It's weird to think that not using technology is a luxury.
That sounds great to me.
The second episode kind of expands, and I think it starts to become clear that Scorsese had an idea of topics, and each episode would be a topic. I am curious how this gets made. Obviously, Martin Scorsese is how it gets made. He goes to Netflix and says, "I want to do something," and they push him a briefcase of money. But why Fran Lebowitz, other than he's her friend? It's just interesting that she gets her own show. Not that she doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying that it's fascinating to me that she gets seven episodes on Netflix. It seems real niche, I guess.
It definitely does. I think maybe they are banking on the fact that Scorsese has Scorsese appeal. I won't say universal appeal, but a very big audience. And people probably want to watch stuff about New York. I bet they can look at an algorithm and say, well, people from all over the world enjoy this brand of city exploration, musings. And I had the same thought, like, how do they put this together? Because a lot of it is her doing public speaking engagements, and he kind of threads things together that way. I mean, I'm sure that she probably has some beats that she hits a lot at these forums or Q&As or whatever. But the way that he weaves it into interviews that he does, it's impressive. I agree that there was theme. I appreciated that they got the New York stuff out of the way in the first. I did enjoy it, but I thought that once she got into talking about music and art and her views on that. It's like, oh, this is, we're not just monologuing about tourists anymore. This is really interesting and really good.
What did you take, what did you make of her, thoughts on art and talent, how she talks about talent is actually sprinkled randomly throughout our population.
I thought it was funny that she said it's the most infuriating thing in the world how, I don't know that she used the word democratic or inclusive, but you could infer that, that there is no control, that it is totally, you know, if you have a skill, if you are talented, then nobody can take that away from you. And it was interesting to see somebody, who came up in a different era think and talk about the TikTok kind of world that we live in now, where, you know, she believes in the, in capital A art, and she believes that talent is almost a supernatural thing. And I feel like people don't want to believe those things anymore. They want to say,
no, they don't.
If you work hard, if you blah, 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 you know, there's nothing inherently special about anyone. They just hustle. It's all in the hustle. Hustle is like the most bullshit word of the 21st century. And it's kind of refreshing to, it does make art exclusive to the lucky, the people who are born talented in some ways, though I think she tempered that really well by saying, you know, I don't sing well, but I love to sing. I just don't do it in public. These are two different things. So you can still participate in expressing yourself, but have some respect for the almost divine thing that happens when somebody's really good at painting or really good at writing or really a great musician. And I thought, like, when she gets into the stuff about Duke Ellington and Mingus, and, you know, she kind of runs alongside Patti Smith. You know, when you hear Patti Smith talk about a certain era of New York, she's like the Forrest Gump of that world. Like, she just was everywhere. She met everybody, mm-hmm. and she has all these great stories. It's like, you know, oh, you saw Mingus? Well, I had breakfast with Mingus. He came to my mom's house for Thanksgiving. That stuff's so good. I love hearing this. If it was only that, I would watch 7 episodes of Fran mm-hmm. Lebowitz talks about having breakfast with famous people.
Well, it is a large part of the show. Why is hustle the biggest bullshit of our time?
I think that there deserves to be, I think everybody, hustle is important as a concept, like working hard, refining what you do. People always say, oh, I'm working on my craft. Like, that's, you either have it or you don't in a lot of ways. And you can get better at something, but I think what she's arguing for, and it kind of struck a chord in me and how I think about things, enjoy the fact that some people are just supernaturally good at what they do. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, when she went off on that, I immediately thought of you. I was curious what your take on that would be.
Well, I think it's important that she tempered it again with that shouldn't stop anyone from expressing themselves. You know, her point
for sure.
Her point was, maybe just don't share it. Do we have to put that on Instagram? Is it really that important? All those kind of things. It's not to like, she's not trying to be a gatekeeper. Or at least she wasn't to me.
Right. Yeah, I felt so much in common with her when she went off on her couple of rants about posting pictures of food online. And I really related to that. But her riff on air travel in episode 3 really sounds like the same conversations you and I have had. And we could have written those rants.
But it was funny to hear it from someone who actually experienced like the Mad Men era of travel.
Yeah.
It was amusing. It kind of went back to like the almost Seinfeld stand-up-esque I hate tourists, and then into the airline. But her talking about the need to travel, you know, like I have my bags mm-hmm. in the lobby of my building at 6 a.m. and this asshole comes back from the gym and says, oh, are you going on vacation? It's like, no, I'm going to get money to come back here so that I can continue to live here.
Yeah. Which is New York. That would make sense if you lived in New York.
There's a famous New Yorker drawing where it's a drawing of America, right? Where New York is massive, and then there's a little gap, and then there's like Los Angeles and San Francisco are kind of little blips out there. And that's like, if you live in New York, that's how you view America. And that Fran Lebowitz probably drew that picture. based on the show.
Yeah, I've had conversations with people from New York who could not find Alabama on a map.
It's amazing. Why would you?
Yeah. Hey, this show actually led me to find out that friend Leibowitz and I share a birthday.
Congratulations.
And that made sense to me. I felt like she and I are tethered to one another anyway. Yeah, sure. I would really, I mean, this is not going to happen, but I think it would be great if every couple of years, Scorsese would just sit down with another New York intellectual and just did 5 or 7 episodes just riffing on what they think and their theories about life.
Or even not New York. I mean...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I know him and Terrence Malick have had conversations.
That would be incredible.
Like, I think that... you have to edit this out. What was the name of the Malick film? Like, the super long one about World War II that I just watched?
Shit. Oh, A Hidden Life.
Oh.
Like, I know that Malick and Scorsese talked a lot about spirituality, and I think that Silence and A Hidden Life are... I know Silence was based on a book, but that and Hidden Life are two sides of the same coin. Like, I remember hearing that Malick asked Scorsese while talking about Silence, what does God ask of us? Something like that. And then he made A Hidden Life.
In a handwritten letter.
Amazing.
Which is the fantastic. Best part of all this.
I think the funniest... I haven't maybe spent that much time with Scorsese as a like an interviewer, as a dude. And him being as jovial and just like... It makes sense, as interested in everything as he is so refreshing.
Oh, he's lovely. He's so lovely.
He's a joy.
So tell me, where is that model of New York? You know, that model she keeps standing around and conversing?
I like that they made her put on the surgical cover booty
for
things.
Your shoes.
Yeah, that was great. But they let her walk around on it.
But sometimes she wasn't. Sometimes she didn't have those on. That really caught my attention.
They made her walk around the bodies of water. So that she would.
Do you know where that is?
No, I don't. I meant to look it up.
I have seen it in another show or movie, and I can't recall where it is.
It reminded me of Synecdoche, New York. Did you ever see that?
I never did.
Had that.
I've heard. That's Kaufman?
Yeah.
Well, so tell me, did this show help you remember how stupid people can be at public events? I fucking hate people at public events. I hate them. I'll go on record as that. There it is. It's on record now. Because here was one question someone had the fucking gall to ask. She says, I'm from Spain, and I recently got hit by a cop car. When can I expect my money from the city? Like, Fran Lebowitz has control or any knowledge of that shit. I hate people.
It was funny, though, because it illustrated her point of why she doesn't. She understands why people get angry with her, but like there should be a limit to it because she can't actually do anything. You know, she's screaming into the abyss with the rest of us. Just because her microphone's louder doesn't mean that she can do anything.
Yeah, I just wanted her to tell that person, shut up. I don't know.
She kind of did. She said, what'd she say? Like, is there a question? Something like that.
Yes. Well, she interrupts her before she actually gets to the question and says, is there a question here?
Yeah.
I love that.
This is sort of unrelated, but related. I once saw a fellow New Yorker, Gary Steingart, speak, and some guy there like stood up and asked him a book club question about his first novel, the Russian Debutante's Handbook. And Gary Steingart said, oh yeah, the Russian Debutante's Hand Job. Yeah. And like the guy kept being like saying the whole name Handbook and be like, right. Well, when I was writing the Russian Debutante's Hand Job, I wasn't really thinking of that. And it just made this guy absolutely furious. So obviously it's a New York thing.
Well, I don't know if it is a total New York thing, because if I was ever in that position, I would probably cut someone off and say, get to your question. People love to take the opportunity to say 5 minutes worth of their life story for a 30-second question. You know, when I was in Spain, and then I traveled to New York.
Right.
Shut the fuck up and ask the question.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's where I'll end. Just very much in tune with my New York, my New Yorker side.
Hey, Blaine's really walking here.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's walking here.
I'm telling you, I really have a New Yorker in me, something very deep within my Southern roots. So,
Blaine, did I ever tell you the Charles Mingus story that Larry Campbell told me?
Let's get this on mic and then we'll wrap. Let's hear this.
It's a pretty good one. I try to refrain from the name droppy stuff, but when we
I want you to.
When we were touring with as Donnie Fritz's backing band and playing shows with Larry Campbell and his wife Teresa, he told us this story about, you know, Larry was, he grew up in New York, and so he just saw all these shows in the 60s.
I don't think I realized that. I always thought he was a Texan, but go ahead.
He could go see Mingus. He could go see, like, he saw The Dead a billion times. Just an amazing, if any great 60s band, he saw him, any of the great jazz guys, kind of like what Fran says in the show, like, if I lived at the same time, I probably saw them. Anyway, he's in high school and they maybe sneak out late one night, school night, and go see Mingus. And they're just in awe. You know, he's already a legend in their minds. And after the show, Mingus leaves and he's pushing his bass like on wheels down somewhere in the village. And one of the guys that Larry is with yells, "Hey, Mingus, great show." And it's a bunch of white teenage dudes, you know, screaming across the street, "Hey, Mingus, great show." And he didn't break stride, didn't look. He said, "Hey, fuck you." So Larry Campbell was told "fuck you" by Charles Mingus.
And he
was very proud of that fact many years later.
Let's all embrace our lovable asshole, shall we? That's it for this week of our podcast. We will be back next week, and what we'll try to do is get on social media and let you know ahead of time what we're going to be covering. It's kind of up in the air at the moment. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and we'll talk to you there as well as next Tuesday on our show. Subscribe, rate us, review us, and we'll talk to you soon.